Hello, hello. This is Pelvic Pain Natters. This is Carl Monahan here, founder and former patient of Pelvic Pain, and I'm joined by another founder, Tim Beams, specialist pain physio. We're unpacking what pelvic pain looks like at diagnostic point of communication with a healthcare provider. In the last podcast, we covered things like, what happens when we do get a diagnosis? Is a diagnosis important? And actually, what we can then do from that point of diagnosis moving further forwards. And we just want to build some momentum here. We want to keep informing you, keep on giving you, I mean, I love our reframes, right? We're positive to the core, and we want to try and give you little glimmers of hope and little shards of light through the clouds. In your recovery as well, it can feel very uncertain. And if you have been given a diagnosis recently or even in the past, what is that meaning for you right now? Where are you on your course of treatment and in recovery as well? I had one patient, Tim, with exactly the same symptoms that visited a number of different specialists because he was uncertain around what the diagnosis was that he had. And maybe it didn't quite fit what he'd read up at, past his first diagnosis. So he ended up seeing four different specialists. This is a guy in the States, and he was given four different diagnoses with exactly the same set of symptoms. So chronic prostatitis, chronic pelvic pain syndrome, and interstitial cystitis, and painful bladder syndrome. I mean, there's lots of crossover with all of those, and a patient presenting with exactly the same symptoms clearly broaches all four domains there as well. But how confusing can that be? Like, just that another diagnosis from a different specialist with a slight change from my previous and my previous and my previous diagnosis.
It's confusing, isn't it? Yeah. And the sad thing is to say that I'm sitting here going, like, that's totally understandable. I can see why someone will have given you a slightly different diagnosis. It depends on their, at that moment in time, where they're, what they're hearing, perhaps even their bias, what they work with or who they work with. So also the clinician isn't wrong there. They're just giving you their sense, their flavor of what they're hearing. So, yeah, I think that's a good place to start. And perhaps it, in the moment, you've got four diagnoses. Who do you side with? Where do you side? Where do you start? How do you know where to start? Would that be a nice place to begin? I've got a couple of ideas here. The first one is not scientific at all, really, is go with your gut. Go with your gut. You will be with someone and you just align better with them. You feel more at ease. Perhaps you feel more comfortable sharing some of your story with them. You get a feel of the way that they communicate with you. Maybe it's a sort of unconscious way that they communicate with their body, or it might even just be the surrounds that you're in at that time, that you will just get a sense that you feel a little safer, bit more confident, bit in their presence. And I always think that's a good thing to check in on. Because feeling right, with someone is important in taking a step forward with them. You're going on a journey together. And for some people, you might be on that journey for quite some time as well. In all honesty, it might be several months. And so feeling confident with them is an important place to start. I'm just gonna throw a suggestion out there. That if you are the clinician, it's well worth you saying, are you happy working together to that person coming to see you? And if you are the patient, if you're going to see a clinician, throw that question back at them as well. How confident and comfortable are you working with me? Better than you'll just go with your gut here, but you put your feelers out. put some feelers out and find out, you know, are we meant to work together? And sometimes you need to give it a go. You know, it's like a test ride, isn't it? You know, test drive your clinician and see whether you do, you know, align and feel as easy with them as you continue the process.
What a lovely message. There is there'll definitely be people out there, clinicians that you'd have seen that you just think, I can't be in this room anymore with you. And hopefully you've come across clinicians that you just get a better feel for, that you feel there's a bit more connection, maybe they're willing to spend a bit more time, maybe they hold your gaze and are actually interested in what you've got to say, as opposed to wanting you to leave the office as soon as possible. Sadly, that does happen as well. But yes, that's a really, really nice tip. Go with your gut, see how you feel. Can you see yourself working with this person? And that question to ask as well, around whether they will work with you as a patient. How empowering is that? That to give yourself the resources to ask that question. That's a good, really great bit of advice there, Tim.
And well, I truly believe this. Like you're building your team, and I suppose that sort of gives us a sense of where we could go from here as well. Because your team isn't just you and your clinician. Your team is your wider team, and I mean this depends on you and your family and your cultural upbringing and the beliefs around recovery and rehabilitation and pain and things like that, but. Can you get friends and family involved in parts of your recovery? What about work? And one thing I would say about this is I think this is one of the most untapped resources out there is how much your work can facilitate change and recovery as well in the process. Not never, but that's that, but that can be such a big part of certain people's lives, can't it? You know, if you're spending however many hours a week at work and with the people you're surrounded with. I do hear often, I'm thinking you will as well, how sometimes people don't even want to reveal what they're experiencing to their work. And that can be quite challenging, can't it? That you're having to hide a mega part of your life to people that you spend a mega part of your life with as well. So yeah. And then perhaps we can go a bit bigger than that as well, because each of us live in our own little society as well, and we have our neighbors and we have, you know, people surrounding us as well that perhaps we see less often, but also might be helpful support.
Lovely words here, Tim. I'm going to go back and give some reflections and just examples of how being a bit transparent with this condition can really open up opportunities that if you do remain closed, and I've got patients whose partners don't even know they're going through this, right? And they've been the patient has had this for a good chunk of time, and their partner has no idea. So this patient is isolating themselves, they're not able to communicate freely. I think there's so much just there, and for whatever reason, and there will be a reason, but for whatever reason, they're not comfortable in expressing how they're feeling and the way that they're feeling and the impact it's having over them. Last week, I did speak with a patient from India, whose brother, because this patient from India has been transparent around things, his brother's now doing a bit of training with him, bit of light conditioning work. His brother's massively into the gym, and they're going to take it slow and take it easy. But he's giving my patient the motivation to be a little bit more active. And that's come from my patient putting his hand up and saying, I just need a bit of help. And that's one person in his community. A different patient last week, and we were talking about the benefits of EMDR, like an eye movement technique that can help to calm your system down. And he said, "Oh, my girlfriend's friend does EMDR." And I said, "Well, look, I'm happy to kind of have the conversation with you around what it is, and maybe there's some practical things you can try at home as well. But there's no harm in asking someone else for a bit of help. You don't need to be fully transparent with what's going on. I mean, give them a full page dossier with everything that's going on before they even see you, but definitely inviting them in and just saying, look, I'm struggling a little bit at the moment. Is there any way that I've heard this is helpful, EMDR? Is there any way you can give me some of that? Give me some advice or give me some resources to go to as well. That only comes from when we're able to open up. Work is a great example. It's probably the single one of the single activities that we do most of in our lives, maybe next to sleeping, depending on how are you sleeping and whether you've got kids or not. But if work can get on board and you can open up to a line manager, and again, doesn't mean full transparency, doesn't mean giving them all of your case history. It's just that I've got something going on that's not allowing me to be able to sit down comfortably, or my commute's really not very pleasant at the moment. Can we look at how we can make this work for me? And if it works for me, it's going to work better for you as well. I want to give you the most as you are my line manager, and I'm sure you want to get the most out of me as well. But that little bit of transparency, that little bit of, I think I need some help here, can go an incredibly long way to making your life different. And I love, the people around you. One example that springs to mind here, Tim, and I'll pass the mic back to you, is that I live in Shoreham on the south coast of England, and there's a guy in the local town who set up a men's support group. And so once a month, we go along, and it's just men, and we get given a chance to tell others in the group that we don't know what's going on for us. And we get an opportunity to speak to other men in that same situation that are just struggling. They won't have pelvic pain per se, although ironically, about 10% of the group I was seeing at the time admitted that they had prostatitis. But there are loads and loads of men's health groups that are out there that you can feel like you can be part of as well.
So this conversation is around starting the process, and what I feel we're doing here is we're saying, get your team right. Gather your team members together. You're not alone. And actually we find a lot of help in that support as well, even that someone just occasionally just you might say, do you mind just dropping me a line every week or something, just checking in on me or so, simple stuff that people and what you often find is that there will be certain people who surprise you, who are awesome. They are brilliant team members, and there will inevitably be people who you thought were going to be awesome team members, and they're not quite as good, and that just seems to be the way that it goes, doesn't it? So bring your community together, bring your team together. It helps the starting process. Have we got some other like immediate, like in the moment, just gathering? Where would you say would be another place for us to start thinking?
Yeah, and it's on a similar line there, but I want to turn the tables around a little bit. Let's say you are a partner, or sibling or parent of someone who's going through this condition right now. They probably, and I'm making some assumptions here, but they're probably feeling quite uncomfortable about what's happening for them. Maybe they haven't perhaps fully opened up. So time and space, but do offer them reassurance. Do encourage them to keep active in terms of communication with others as well. It's very easy for patients with this condition to withdraw and to start to close off avenues of communication or social activity, to really start to isolate themselves. And that in itself can become problematic. So if you do have a loved one that is going through this at the moment, do be patient with them, but do try and reach out. Even if it's a message every now and again, how are you doing? No, how are you really doing? Like, genuinely ask the question. And they may not respond, or maybe it takes them a while to respond, but give them the space and the opportunity to do so as well. That's so valuable. And again, there is part of the community there, but I just wanted to turn that around and just say it's so valuable. Knowing where I have been and my mates and how they helped me, and they supported me in getting back to socializing or getting back to physical activity, And it wasn't full transparency, and I didn't wear a t-shirt telling everyone what's going on, but I had a few mates that I let into the circle of trust, if you like, and they really facilitated me feeling different. Not immediately, but over time, with that support there was absolutely golden as well. So I'm not sure. I don't think that's where you were nudging towards, but I hope that's really been valuable there as well, Tim.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I feel like we've got about 10 more podcasts actually to come from this topic. I wonder whether I could suggest something for people who are hearing this. We call it paying forward, don't we, Carl? And I wonder whether coming off listening to this podcast episode that you go and pay forward and you reach out to someone, ask them how they're doing. And notice how it makes them feel, but equally notice how it makes you feel in that moment as well, because it's a really wonderful human trait, isn't it? The ability to be able to look out for and care for other people.
Yeah, so valuable. It will make you feel warm and fuzzy inside in asking the question, and in answering the question, it may even make you feel a bit more heard, a bit more recognized, a bit more seen. So yeah, I think that's I love that. That's been great.
Awesome.
This has been another Pelvic Pain Natters podcast. I'm Carl Monahan. This is Tim Beams. Please do share, rate, review. If you want to contact us, you can reach out at pelvicpainmatters@gmail.com. We hope you're loving the content. And of course, we look forward to hear we look forward to you hearing us on our very next episode as well.
Thanks very much.